From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. While Washington, D.C. is roiled with a looming impeachment inquiry, what is happening in the nation that has been ensnared in the political intrigue? Ukraine. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky is clearly unhappy about his side of the phone call with Donald Trump being shared publicly. But the deeper issue is how dependent Ukraine has been on U.S. military aid against Russia and the political involvement of Ukraine's oil and gas sector. To explore this angle of the story, we turn now to David Marples, Distinguished University Professor at the University of Alberta in Canada, specializing in Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you.
So the last time we had you on our program, it was after Volodymyr Zelensky had just won election. It was sort of this surprising turn for those of us who hadn't been following Ukraine closely of this TV comedian becoming a head of state of Ukraine. Just a few months later, he had this phone call with Trump, which has now become this focus of this impeachment inquiry. Can you first give us a sense of what is the Ukrainian view of what's happening in the United States? How are they viewing this scandal?
Well, it's really not front page material in Ukraine. I've checked several sources, both newspapers and social media. And really, it's a sort of page two item, if you like. It regards the whole incident as part of U.S. internal affairs. I mean, that also is the official view, that Ukraine mustn't make a stance on this. It's not a serious issue for them internally, and that it's not really affected the popularity of Zelensky in Ukraine. So really, it's quite surprising how little attention it's got there compared to virtually everywhere else I can think of, including Russia. And it doesn't seem to have caused a major stir. I think, you know, the difficulty is, as you mentioned, that Zelensky's comments were made public. And I think there there's a kind of dual issue, you know, probably it may have been that this was the way Ukraine decided to approach Trump, you know, in other words, to flatter him and tell him that, you know, whatever is in the United States is better than what we've got here. Or it may have had something to do with Zelensky personally not feeling very adequate to this big test of how he should respond to these to these demands from the U.S. president.
And in fact, let me just give a few quotes from the rough transcript of that phone call to give a sense of Zelensky. A lot of focus has been on, of course, Trump's part of the phone call, but Zelensky's tried to echo some of Trump's language. He said, you know, we're trying to work hard because we wanted to drain the swamp here in our country. We brought in many new people, not the old politicians, not the typical politicians, because we want to have a new format and a new type of government. You are a great teacher for us in that. Zelensky also went on to mention that he stayed at a Trump hotel, you know, which is, of course, an implication for Trump himself and how he benefits from his position as president. But are you suggesting that Zelensky has not paid a political price in the sort of subservience that he showed to Trump in that phone call? Is this just something Ukrainians assume that has to happen, take for granted that Ukraine is terribly dependent on the U.S.?
Well, I think at the moment Ukrainians are prepared to give Zelensky a chance to prove himself as president. I mean, he's brand new to the job. He's selected a new team. His prime goal is to attack corruption, of which this is a part, as well as end the war with Russia. And these are the prime concerns, and to improve the economy, I should say. But these are the prime concerns of Zelensky. And so if he doesn't perform particularly well in his first meeting with the U.S. president, I don't think that would be held against him. But also, as I suggested, it may be quite a ruse on the Ukrainians' part as to how to approach President Trump, that this is the way to get around Trump. This is the way to get things out of him when the situation might otherwise be difficult, to praise him. And that seems to be how he approached this particular interview or phone call.
How dependent is Ukraine on U.S. military aid? And if you can just give our audience a brief reminder of what Russia's role has been on the Ukraine border and how U.S. military aid assists in that or addresses that.
Yeah, I mean, there are two things really. Russia, of course, annexed Crimea, and that problem is not really making headlines anymore, in that Russia is not prepared to give way on that, although they're also beginning to control the Azov Sea and prevent trade between Ukraine's internal ports. That's a big factor. But in the Donbass, the war started in the spring of 2014, and although there have been two amnesties and partial stoppages of let's say, full-scale military actions, it's continued on a small scale. I mean, approximately 5 or 6 Ukrainian soldiers die every week. And I think the role of the United States is to help shore up the Ukrainian army in various ways. I mean, the particular lethal weapons were not granted under the Obama presidency, and there's been a lot of pressure from Ukraine to grant these kind of lethal weapons, javelins and so forth, that can stem border type attacks from
javelins. Did you say javelins?
Yeah, that is the official. But we should also keep in mind that what Russia has expended on this war is not really a full-scale attack. Russia is more or less propping up the separatist side, providing them with weaponry, other material, and in order to keep the war going and to keep the separatist governments intact. I mean, this is not a full-scale Russian attack, which would be something much more serious. And, you know, Russia, in military terms, is a far greater power than Ukraine. I mean, it's a very unequal kind of battle. But this is not a full-scale onslaught. It's not a head-on-head collision. It's more of a guerrilla-style warfare backed up by the Russian government.
Right. And I should mention, javelins are actually a reference to a type of missile, not a spear. So then this whole issue of how Trump withheld the aid to Ukraine before his phone call with Zelensky becomes really critical. Although, and Trump is claiming that because he did not mention that holding back of military aid in his phone call with Zelensky, there was no quid pro quo, hence no smoking gun, it's not an issue. But how significant was Trump's stoppage of that military aid after the Pentagon had already approved it?
Yeah, I think it's quite significant. And the question is really what Trump expected, you know, whether he didn't eventually expect to give the aid if this inquiry against the Bidens was underway. It's impossible to tell. I mean, Trump's excuse was that, you know, Ukraine had to clean up corruption. And that's a fair enough comment. I mean, Ukraine has to do that. This is what the IMF has been saying for a long time. But it's also what the Zelensky presidency is intending to do. And, you know, has made some initial steps. And, you know, ironically, the prosecutor general's position, which is under investigation by the White, you know, by the inquiry in the United States, is the pivotal position, because the prosecutor general in question, Shokin, was questioned by many authorities, not only Ukrainians, but Western powers and the United States for his corruption. Lutsenko then came into office, Yuri Lutsenko. And he also did not satisfy the critics, and he stepped down as well. And so this particular position is really under fire. So I don't know. It's impossible for me to say what Trump's motives were and whether his sole intent was to get something back in order to release the weapons. But it certainly sounded that way from the transcript.
Right. He was suggesting during the UN meeting that's still actually taking place and wrapping up that the reason for holding the aid back was to push Ukraine to address corruption. But Ukraine has been addressing corruption. And so let's go to this issue around what Trump is claiming was his reason for wanting to help Ukraine uncover corruption. He's claiming that Joe Biden, as vice president, used his position to enrich his son, Hunter Biden, who was brought on to head a gas company named Burisma. And of course, Hunter Biden doesn't really have or did not have any experience leading that sort of firm. So sort of one does have to wonder why a person like Hunter Biden would be brought on. But can you explain to us or give us a bit of a history lesson around that whole issue, around why Hunter Biden was brought on and how he might have benefited from his position in this Ukrainian company in a way that may be completely legal, but certainly seems a little unethical.
Yeah, and that those two phrases may not be contradictory.
Right.
And I think that is the problem. I think one has to go back a little further and look at the breakup of the Soviet Union and the emergence of an independent Ukraine, and Russia for that matter, where you had sort of the crash privatization programs and the sale of important natural resources to individual businessmen or companies who, at very low prices, they would make a huge profit and basically plundered the countries concerned. And often they did that with the advice and support of US businessmen who were working in Ukraine, let's say in this particular instance. It's not necessarily illegal, but at the same time, these businessmen from the West, as from Ukraine, stood in line to make enormous profits very quickly. And these companies grew in enrichment as well on a very large scale. So Ukraine, like Russia, has a small number of very rich people and a mass of, by our standards, very poor people as well. So they really stand out in society. And at the time Burisma was formed, in the spring of 2014, you could say all hell had let loose. The Euromaidan had resulted in a clash in the central square, over 100 people killed, a war in the Donbass, the annexation of Crimea, and then the formation of this company in a pivotal area of oil and gas, where Ukraine has been reliant on Russia for a couple of decades, basically, that Russia, asking Russia to provide lower prices in order for Ukraine to afford this oil and gas, as they had done since Soviet times. And clearly, Hunter Biden is not an expert in oil and gas. But the way it was described by Joe Biden, you know, was that this really is to help them recover their reputation in the eyes of the population, you know, that their esteem is low. How can they sort of represent themselves better? And in that area, perhaps he could have done something. But by my way of thinking, the sort of salaries that we were talked about in the media are absurd, you know, for that kind of support. They're simply absurd. So why would Joe Biden have agreed to this? I really couldn't say, but I don't see how someone in his position could have thought that that was a reasonable salary to expect, given the expertise of his son and the sort of aid he could offer. But that's been the same for virtually all the Westerners getting involved in Ukraine in this particular area, finance and business. So it's not new, it's not good, and it really needs to stop. I mean, it's the sort of thing that Ukraine should address. Otherwise, it will simply continue.
It essentially sounds like the sort of casual corruption that is expected, that happens all the time, that Trump's own people engage in, that Trump himself engages in. I mean, his former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, is involved in similar dealings. So this is the sort of thing that U.S. political operatives who have connections to administration officials over and over again peddle their influence in other countries around the world who are dependent on the U.S., right?
Yes. And I think, you know, with all due respect, since I'm not an American, but I think in President Trump's case, it's simply normal behavior that this is the way he operates. It's not so much a regular business operator, but a kind of corrupt business operator where you simply expect people to do things for favors. You get favors in return. And, you know, deep enmeshment, I would say, of the president in both Russia and Ukraine, but especially Russia, of course. And we don't know all the dealings. We haven't seen tax returns. We don't know the financial background of some of this information. But clearly, you know, this is the way Trump operated and thought that this was the way to operate in future. And I actually think he may be correct. He doesn't see anything wrong. You know, he had that beautiful phone call with Zelensky, quote unquote, and he thinks that this is the way things operate. I don't think he ever saw anything abnormal about it. And I think, you know, the fact that he thinks he's been impeached unfairly is genuine. I don't think he's making this up. I think this is the way he expects things to work.
Right. I mean, he ordered the release of the rough transcript because he assumed it would absolve him, only to find that the opposite has happened. What about Putin, Vladimir Putin, in all of this? Setting aside the idea that Russia interfered in the 2016 election, clearly Trump has tried to curry favor with Putin. He has had business interests in Russia well before he ran for the presidency. And he seems to be quite enamored of Putin, as he has been with other sort of dictatorial leaning world leaders. Does Trump's relationship with Putin worry Zelensky and Ukraine, you know, because it's definitely a departure from the Obama presidency?
Yes, it worries him very much. And I think, you know, many Ukrainians back in the previous presidency of Petro Poroshenko felt in 2000 and let's say 2014, when they were really struggling against Russia, that the United States would naturally support them. Any US president would be on their side. Even during the Euromaidan protests in favor of an association agreement with the European Union, very pro-Western protests, several US politicians showed up in the main square in Kiev to support the people doing the protests, the demonstrators. And Senator John McCain, for example, was one of those. And this was normal for the Ukrainians. They got used to it, expecting US as their backer, their main supporter and their most powerful supporter. And then you see the way Trump behaved with Putin in Singapore, this kind of abject behavior, basically saying that the Cold War was America's fault from the very beginning and things like that. Well, it induced horror in Ukraine, absolute horror. And I think they don't really know how to trust Trump and how to bring him on their side, as they could do with previous presidents. I mean, paradoxically, for all the things that Obama did do, I don't think foreign policy was really one of his main concerns, but it's definitely one of Trump's main concerns. Trump is definitely doing things in foreign policy. It's just doing things that aren't expected, you know, like crossing into North Korea, walking out on G7, walking out on his NATO friends, the so-called friends anyway, and getting into arguments with Democrats and hanging around with dictators. And this is really how he's behaved from the very beginning of the presidency. And it causes a lot of concern in Ukraine. So this actually explains a lot, you know, why Ukraine takes this attitude, we have to be deferential to Trump, etc. Because the war with Russia is the big concern. And it's not a direct conflict, but still, Russia is the pivotal country for Ukraine. It's like Canada and the United States. Like, Canada could not really survive without United States trade. Ukraine can't really survive at present without Russian trade, even though it's trying very hard to find alternative partners. And also geographically, of course, Russia is the neighbor, the closest neighbor. And, you know, it's a very divisive issue, Russia and Ukraine, because the eastern part of Ukraine have traditionally been very friendly towards Russia. The far west have been very anti-Russian, Russophobic, you could say.
There are some reports suggesting that Russia is benefiting from this scandal with Ukraine and the U.S. And certainly, you know, whether or not Russia has orchestrated any of this, you know, some might suggest that that's happening, but it's probably just that Trump's own ineptness has led to the situation. The Wall Street Journal had a piece entitled, "As Washington Fights Over Ukraine, Putin Smiles." While Kiev comes off as an inept pawn, the spectacle boosts Kremlin efforts to undermine the U.S.'s role as a world leader and a model of democracy. So certainly Russia is benefiting from military aid being withheld to Ukraine, but also just geopolitically, it seems as though Russia is watching the U.S. implode.
Yes, but I mean, one shouldn't overestimate Russia's position either. I mean, in economic terms, the you know, Russian GDP is less than California's. It's not a major economic player in the world. It's a major military player. And this makes its position both strong and weak. I mean, it can enforce things against its near neighbors, but it can't do much on an economic scale. It's not someone that's going to raise its living standards of its population overnight or very rapidly. It's very dependent on natural resources like oil and gas and on world oil and gas prices. So Russia's position, I think, is often exaggerated. Yes, of course, Putin will be smiling. I mean, it's the ideal thing for him would be for some scandal in the United States. But probably Russia's position is that the impeachment should take place and then fail. I mean, that would be the logical thing. I mean, Russia would not particularly like to see a Democrat in power and may not want to see, you know, say Mike Pence take over as president or something like that. I think Trump is good for Russia as far as they're concerned. He's pro-Russian, he's friendly, and he is not going to do them any harm. So, and in addition to that, one should say that Ukraine, as far as Russia's concerned, is its backyard. It's never regarded Ukraine as an independent state. It's never fully recognized Ukrainian independence in any meaningful way, and regards it as ethnically pretty similar, someone with the same history, the same culture, the same religion. And therefore, it's quite unnatural for Russia that Ukraine should be thinking of joining NATO or the European Union, and probably in that order. You know, NATO is a really red line for Russia, whether it's Putin or someone else as president.
Right, and Trump has done a pretty good job of alienating NATO allies, European allies on this front. Well, finally, do you think that out of all of this scandal, just looking at what's happening here in the US from Canada as a Ukraine expert, do you think that Joe Biden will emerge from this whole story unscathed? I mean, Trump and his supporters desperately want to turn this entire scandal into one centered on Joe Biden. They're trying to get the hashtag Bidengate to stick. It's not quite working. Do you think Biden will emerge unscathed?
No. Not from my perspective, no. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. And I'm not totally convinced that he should either. Mm-hmm. Although I think, again, he's not committed any crimes. He's not done anything wrong. And he's not necessarily responsible for what his family members do either. And I think, you know, that should be stressed. But I cannot imagine that he would emerge unscathed from this scandal. And that, of course, will help his rivals for the Democratic nominee. And I think that you'll probably find over the next week or two, it will start to have an impact.
Well, we'll certainly be keeping our eye on that. I want to thank you so much, David, for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
My guest has been David Marples. He's a distinguished university professor at the University of Alberta in Canada, specializing in Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus. We've been discussing the Ukraine angle of the impeachment story here in the U.S. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can subscribe to our daily newsletter and also to our video channel on Vimeo. And you can find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.